Dr. Volk. So we are in Shaar HaChesh Shaar HaNefesh, Perek Gimel, Cheshbon HaShvi'i. What we've been discussing now is contemplating, do I make the grade of an Eved Hashem? Is that my identity? As we've been discussing, the Chavos HaVavos wants to get us to a place where not just that we do the mitzvahs as they come up, but that our whole identity is one of an Eved Hashem. Meaning there's a difference between a person who you contract to do some job. You send a fabric to a seamstress. Okay, she knows what she has to do for you. She's in her house. And she makes her hours and she gets the job done. But there's a difference between that and a personal attendant whose job is 24/7 to be on call for you. I don't know if anybody here has that, but what we're talking about is this personal attendant, even though it might only be six or seven things throughout the day, but that person's whole day is focused on this. That person's all they're there for is that. Might not be relevant at every moment, but everything they do in life is working around that. But overall, the point is that this is their identity. They are here to be at the master's beck and call. So where the Chofetz Chaim wants to get us to, and he says this is something we should be considering, we should be contemplating. Am I in a servant-master dynamic with Hashem? As in, am I that loyal servant who's always there at his beck and call? Now, we stressed last week that on Hashem's end, he tells us, you're my children. But on our end, we don't just say, oh, okay, great, so I can be a troublemaking kid and let my father deal with it. On our end, we strive to earn the very great title of someone who can actually be accurately defined as an Eved Hashem. So the Chofetz Chavavos is going, we saw last week, is going on to describe how this person is using all of his faculties and all of his body, is all focused on what can I do to please Hashem and earn favor in his eyes, to become that much more keenly aware of Hashem, to the extent that I feel that ongoing awe and trepidation and even self-consciousness from Hashem with everything that I do, which then starts translating into Ahava and into just longing to do what he wants. Because this is not about just fear that he can beat me up. Like this sense of Avdus is coming from my gratitude and from my awe at the fact that he's interested in me. He's giving me the privilege of drawing me close. And we get a very mundane mashal of a person who there's some very famous billionaire or celebrity who everybody would like to have their attention. Everybody would like to get close to them. And this person pulls you into his close circle. So you're going to be very conscious of that the whole time. I don't know if you, but a teenager, right, would be very conscious of that the whole time and always figuring out what are things I can do to enhance the attention and to make the person like me even more. This is the dynamic that the Chofetz Chavavos is trying to move us toward with Hashem. And then he goes on and says, we're going to start in the middle of this paragraph. When you get to this place, it becomes mutual. This is really the big point here. Then, when you're in this place, Hashem starts making it mutual and showing his attention to you. You will find yourself getting special favors from Hashem. And you'll find special godly light in your life, whether it's in terms of Siyata Dishmaya or whether it's just in terms of Hashem showing you in all kinds of different ways that he's there. He's responding to the fact that you're reaching out for him. And if you are attuned, if you became attuned by learning to know it, everything that he's busy doing with you all the time in the natural sense, your body working, etc., you'll start noting his involvement in your life in other ways things that can get woven into nature and they can be missed by people, but you'll start sensing how your relationship with him is interactive. It's mutual. And it can also take the form of Urim HaGdolim, great lights. What we mean is your intuition starts moving up. Sometimes people call this Ruach HaKodesh. But let's understand that the term Ruach HaKodesh, we often think of it in very like a black and white, cut and dry kind of terms, meaning there's regular and then there's something magical, something mystical. A person gets these flashes of mystical visions. But you have to realize that the term Ruach HaKodesh is a very, very broad term that has a whole gradient. Ruach HaKodesh can often take the forms of special insight, special intuition that you wouldn't necessarily note as, oh boy, this was a vision, this was something supernatural. No, this is how Ruach HaKodesh can work its way. In fact, I'll say even more than that. The Steibler talks about it. This. If a person over long enough a time starts integrating Jewish sensitivities, Torah sensitivities, and starts responding to situations according to Torah sensitivities, we'll call that Ruach HaKodesh. That is Ruach HaKodesh. He has the spirit of Hashem in him, in his sensitivities. Even though we're not necessarily talking about a supernatural process, but what we're saying is the more keenly aware and the more attuned you become to Hashem, the more he works himself into your life. I'll give an example of someone once told me a story that I like really didn't like. This person was trying to make a certain point, and he actually kind of like moved me in the opposite direction. But someone told me once a story about just bringing out how you have to have Derech Eretz, which is certainly true. He said that he had a friend of his, a wealthy man, who a mashulach once came to him. A poor Meshulach from Eretz Yisrael came to his house and came in and presented his story. And the person wrote him out a check for $18 or something. So the Meshulach responded and said, "Well, with a house like this, this is all you give?" Now that's not a nice thing to say, but let's go on. Said exactly then, this man's daughter was walking by. Okay, young 18-year-old girl grew up in the lap of luxury. She walked by, she heard him saying this, so she plucked the check out of his hand and tore it up, and she said, "If you talk to my father that way, you don't even deserve this." Okay, that was the story. This person was telling the story to make the point of that you have to operate with Derech Eretz. It's true, you have to operate with Derech Eretz, but let me suggest a more Jewish version of the story. Okay, I'm going to change the story a little bit. And then I'll change the story again. Wouldn't this be a more Jewish version of the story? And there were stories like this. The Mashulach responded that way. And you know what the Baal HaBayis said? The Baal HaBayis said to himself, if this is how he's responding, he must really be in dire need. And therefore, he upped the check to whatever amount you'll fill in. Wouldn't that be a more Jewish style? The first style was justified. The second version is Jewish. It's a story of Jewish sensitivity. Or if you want a little bit of a different version of the story, what if the daughter would have walked by and said to her father, if the guy's responding like that, he's probably in dire need. Now, again, who's right here and who's right? Everybody's wrong in this story. My point is not, it's not like, well, if he was wrong, then she was right. And if she was right, wrong, then he was right. There should be a person to relate with Derech Eretz. But when we're talking about, and there are such stories. There is such a story about a big Gabbai stuck in Yerushalayim, a famous story. It's a Gabbai stuck in Yerushalayim in the days when everyone in Yerushalayim was destitute, talking about way back when. Everyone in Yerushalayim was destitute, and here you had a Gabbai stucker who was trying his best to care for the people. And so even a little bit more extreme, someone came to him and told him, someone familiar with him, he knew him. And he used to help him out regularly, but he came and told him about all the pressing needs they have and told him, look, this is all I can give you now. And he gave him X amount. So the guy slapped him in the face and said, "After hearing all my needs, this is what you have to give me." So the Gabbai Tzedakah stood up immediately, went out, and made a whole other round of collection for the guy, figuring that I know this person. He's a balanced person. If this is how he responded, his situation must really be extreme. So obviously, the moral of this story is not he was right in slapping him in the face, right? That's obviously not our point. Our point is that this is certainly a more Jewish version of the story. Now, if you want to take the story a step further, and this is part of the Jewish version of it, we'll take a story a step further with the other story, the story of the guy in the fancy house. Okay, now I'm adding this in based on my own imagination. Okay, but again, the guy came to this fellow's house, was so Noah ate in the evening or whatever it is. Asked, got the response, gave his response, but not nice. Fine. But now I want to back up and, based on my own imagination, tell about what was going on since 7 in the morning. Okay, how this guy came to America to try to collect money for his desperate, for his ill child. And he spent 4 grueling days in a country that he doesn't even know the language, in a basement of some shul where they gave him a mattress. And he's buying for breakfast, lunch, and supper a roll with cream cheese. And he's going from place to place, and he was hoping to come back with at least a substantial amount. And he's barely managing to cover his plane ticket. And this is his last day in the United States. And he's been going from shul to shul and from person to person. And he's about $300 above his plane ticket. That's what he's up to. And this is the last house he's going for. And he shouldn't have said that. And it was a stupid thing to say, and it was wrong. But what was it coming from? So why am I bringing out all this? Why am I bringing out all this? But my point is that when we're talking about the story of the Gabbai Tzedakah from Yerushalayim, you're talking about Ruach HaKodesh, a person who's able to respond to a situation not in the natural way, but based on acquired Torah sensitivities. That is what we would call Ruach HaKodesh. Now, I'll add another point. All of us have that to a certain extent. One who's a Baal Ruach HaKodesh, all of us have that to a certain extent. We can give different examples. But all of us have been steeping in Torah values for long enough that different people to different extents. But we all have those areas where we respond based on Torah sensitivities that we acquired over the years. The more you hone those Torah sensitivities, the more it'll get. So again, my point here is just to show how the term Ruach HaKodesh has a very, very broad spectrum and it can begin with things that we are living with all the time, but it can go further and further and become more enhanced and more refined until it does reach the level we were discussing, mamish, godly intuition. And then it can reach the levels of the stories we read about as kids of the great Chassidish Rebbes with their supernatural Ruach HaKodesh. But my point is that it's not just like, oh, there's Ruach HaKodesh in the magical story sense, and then there's just the rest of us. It's a whole gradient. And here the Chaim Salvavus once again is telling us that when a person becomes attuned to Hashem at this level and really earns that title of Eved Hashem, Hashem will start responding in kind, and the person will start noting Hashem's involvement and interaction with him. And it can also get to that level of Urim Gedolim, of actually having flashes of light that Hashem sends in different ways, of intuition, of picking up on things, etc. Now, we move on, and we say the Ikar HaKoel. The essence of everything, meaning, what does he mean by the essence of everything? He means the essence of the whole system that we call Yiddishkeit and Avodas Hashem, behashlomas tanoei ha'avdus, is to be able to excel in being an Eved. To be able to say if there are different criteria as to what makes an Eved, I check off as many of them as possible. And that my primary agenda in life, I might even say my exclusive agenda in life, is serving my soul master with all my heart, b'lev shalem v'ne'eman, with a wholehearted and loyal heart. U'bezeh tiavosa b'lekov, and this is what really brings a person to full love of Hashem and the avos elikov boy, and this is what brings Hashem's love for the person to its highest level. Meaning, it's a very mutual business. The more a person feels that sense of avdus, the more of a genuine dynamic with Hashem he has, and the more mutual, the more Hashem will respond in kind, in a mutual manner. Like the pasuk says, "Es Hashem he'emarto hayayim." The word he'emarto is an unusual word. What it means in practical terms is, you put Hashem up on a pedestal today. V'Hashem he'emircha, and therefore Hashem is putting you up on a pedestal. What's that? He'emarta means you made him great. It's an unusual usage. V'Omar, and another pasuk says, "Ulisitcha." It's a continuation of that previous pasuk, a couple of pasukim later, and he's placing you up on high, and then v'ro kol ame oretz kishem Hashem nikra alecha v'yaru mimecha. And all the nations around will see how the name of Hashem is upon you, and they'll fear you. And he's bringing out a point here. He's bringing out that the more, here he's really referring back to the great days when the presence of the Shekhinah was mamish open and manifest. When Klal Yisrael on a national level were living up to that, we're earning that title. On a national level, so Hashem showed himself, showed his connection with them in a more open way, and it created a reality where all the nations around were in awe. They saw Hashem reflecting off of his people. Because the people were showing Hashem what avodim they were to him, he was busy showing, in turn, how connected he is to them, and that created an awe in all the people surrounding them. That time was it. Huh? Is there somebody with a white Toyota blocking the parking spot into the Ulam? No. Right. Okay. Okay. Hello. Babisad. Okay. I'll give an example of this. Remember the story of Chizkiya HaMelech and Sancheriv? Chizkiya HaMelech, the king of Ashur, Sancheriv, the king of Ashur, was coming against Yerushalayim. He was busy conquering all the neighboring countries, and he was now coming up against Yerushalayim. And the way it looked, Chizkiya was not really naturally not in position to stand off against him. And not only that, he was sick at the time. He was mamish sick in bed, deathly ill. And Sancheriv was just washing across the whole area. And it looked like he had all his hordes right outside Yerushalayim, and he was going to just wash over it. It would take a day or two. And Chizkiya, okay, the whole story, Chizkiya made his special tefillah to Hashem. And what happened was that one night before Chizkiya was going to move into Yerushalayim, his entire army was struck dead. He woke up in the morning. He survived because Hashem wanted him to get the message, but he found himself in a whole camp of dead people. The Gemara discusses if there were six survivors or maybe 10 survivors among a camp of hundreds of thousands that come up against Yerushalayim. The whole army, the mightiest army in the world, that was busy conquering country after country, was struck dead in one night. Okay, very great Yeshua, but the point of it is, I'm not getting into the whole story now, but the effect of that was afterwards that all the neighboring nations just looked at the Jewish people with absolute awe. And if it says that in those days, if a Jew traveled to some other country for business or for some reason, the people around bowed down to him. This is an example of what we're showing of Hashem when The, when we are proper avodim to him, he'll show his mastery. It'll reflect over us, and everyone around will be in awe. And he adds, "V'atam b'zeh." The reason for that is, "Ki yadua shegdulas ha'eved v'ikarma alosei etzel b'nei adam." When you hear that so and so is a servant of so and so, what does that mean to you? It really depends who the master is. But let's say you hear, "Okay, so and so is a slave in a cotton plantation. He's one of 300 working for the guy who owns it." Okay, it doesn't tell you much. But if you hear, let's say you have a very, very great king. I'll take a simple example, right? The ambassador of a mighty country is going to be greeted with a lot of respect wherever he goes, right? Even though he's not the president, he's not the king, but he is the representative, and they relate to him in the way they would essentially be relating to his boss. So people will revere a servant according to who his master is. If his master is the greatest and most powerful master of all, and they know that this servant is considered the master's close confidant, people are going to be acting with reverence toward this servant. And this is what he's telling us. Okay, we'll move on to the next cheshbon, Shmini. A person we should all contemplate to how wholehearted is your heart dedicated to Hashem? How totally is your heart dedicated to Hashem? That includes two aspects. Now, here's an interesting point. Anybody who's well schooled in Chayim Zavalis, anybody who's been through it with Rav Malinowitz will appreciate this more, but never, whatever the case is, he's bringing together two different parts of Chodesh HaVavos that don't seem to have a connection. The first Shar in Chodesh HaVavos is what we call Shar HaYichud. Shar HaYichud, if we'll translate that into contemporary terms, we call it proofs of God. It's not really that, it's the philosophical version of that from more than 1,000 years ago. But what's that? For whoever requires it, right? It's basically substantiating Hashem's oneness in a philosophical way. That's Shara Yichud.
Let Rav Malinowitz just skip that, by the way.
Oh.
He said it wasn't really relevant for our day and
Right.
age. He went straight to like Shara
B'china.
Yichud.
Moved on to Shara B'china. So that's right. It's a very deep, heavy philosophical substantiation of Hashem's oneness. So there's a lot of debate. There's a lot of debate as to whether we should be learning it today, we shouldn't be learning it today. And I'll just add to what you said. Malinowitz didn't teach it, but he told me, interestingly, he said that Malinowitz was he did his own thing. He was his own man, he did his own thing. So the fact that many didn't teach it wasn't reason for him not to teach it. So he said that he decided he was going to teach it, and he taught one round of it. He taught one round of it. And he said all the court recordings uncannily got ruined. I explain it as you will. All of the recordings got ruined. And he said he took that as a message and he stopped teaching it from that point on. That's what he told me. Mintaka used to skip it. But Victor Miller also used to skip it. But and there are svarim that tell us that there are other things that would be more compatible with our way of thinking and with our needs. Kuzari, Das Tunis, and the Ramchal. Whatever the case is, Shara Yichud is appreciating Hashem's oneness. Then there's another Shara called Shara Yichud Alev, which shares the word Yichud, but if you just learn the two Sha'arim, they don't really seem to be connected. Shara Yichud Alev means something else. Shara Yichud Alev means dedicating your actions toward Hashem exclusively. That's what Yichud Alev is. Meaning, for example, we'll just get some broad examples. A person is learning Torah and wants to become a rav. Why does he want to become a rav? Is it because it's good parnasa? It isn't, to my knowledge. But let's say, okay, is it because it's good parnasa? Is it because for prestige and status, or is it for Hashem? So we're just using that example. Yichud Alev means getting yourself to a place where no, your sole purpose is Hashem. You're giving tzedakah, doing achnasas orchim. Is it for Hashem or is it because it earns you social standing? So again, Chavos wants you to get you to a place where your actions are totally and exclusively dedicated to Hashem. So that's Yichud Alev. Yichud Alev means getting your heart into one place. It's not shooting in all directions. It's not doing mitzvahs because it wants this and this and this and this. There's a soul focus in the mitzvahs you do, Hashem. So here, the Chavos HaLulav, now the two subjects don't seem to be related, right? Yichud Hashem means understanding Hashem's oneness, knowing that Hashem is one. There's the other subject of that the things you do should be exclusively dedicated to Hashem. But here, he's coming and telling us that the two kind of join together. When we say that we want your heart to be exclusively dedicated to Hashem, it brings the two of these things together. So he says, Echad mehem yichud alev biyichud hakel. Number one is truly appreciating and internalizing Hashem's oneness, kasher b'yanu b'tchilas ha-sefer hazeh, as we discussed back at the beginning of this sefer. Hasheni, number two is yichud halev, is to have your heart as one, meaning exclusively focused, be'ez she'yaseh me'uma mimaseh olam haba. Whenever you are doing anything toward Olam Haba, meaning anything Hashem related, choiva or reshus, whether it is a proper mitzvah or an optional deed. What does that mean? Chavos HaLulav wants to get us to a place. I give examples of doing mitzvahs exclusively to Hashem. The Chavos HaLulav wants to get us to a place that also our so-called mundane activities should be focused on Hashem and even exclusively. We've talked about this other times. But for example, we talked about why you're learning Torah, why are you giving tzedakah, why are you doing chesed. But now let's talk about why are you eating, why are you sleeping, why are you working for a living. Well, the answer to that might be, well, what do you mean? I need to live. But the Chavos HaLulav says, no, we want your life to be exclusively ruchnius. What do you mean? I have to eat. Well, okay, fine. But if we take this idea to the next level, our eating can be focused on Hashem, can be a part of our relationship with Hashem. We've talked about this, but in an immediate sense, you just ask yourself for a minute as you're sitting down for lunch, why am I about to eat? So if the answer is, well, because I'm hungry, okay, I mean, that's legitimate enough. Sometimes the answer isn't even that. Told him, my father, he grew up in Eretz Yisrael in the days of what they called Tkufat HaTzena, when there was very little here. So he said that when he moved to America, he said he discovered that in English, hungry is another word for bored. He said in Hebrew, it wasn't like that. Hungry meant hungry. But he said in English, hungry is another word for bored. So the rule in our house was that if you had eaten within the last 3 hours, you weren't allowed to say
I'm
you're
hungry.
hungry. And if you had eaten within the last 6 hours, you're not allowed to say I'm starving. It drove him nuts, you know. 10 minutes after the Shabbos Suda, I'm starving, right? So some people, you're sitting down for lunch, not even because you're hungry, because you've been snacking since breakfast. Why are you sitting down for lunch? Because there's good food to be had. But then there's I'm hungry. Okay, so it's a personal activity. Well, why do you need to eat if you're hungry? Well, I'm going to start getting weak. Okay, so what's the problem if you're weak? If the answer is, well, I don't want to be weak. Okay, so this is just about you. But if the answer is, well, I'm living a life of service to Hashem, I am a servant of Hashem. Hashem wants me to be able to function in His service, and therefore I better eat lunch. Oh, now your lunch it takes on a whole different value. So if you just sit down for a minute before you're about to eat and you ask yourself that question, why am I eating? It's not just an automatic gastronomical response, but oh, there's a purpose, there's a value in the fact that I'm about to eat. Or you can also term it differently. Hashem gave you a body. What does He want you to do with that body? We learn later in Chavos HaLulav. The body is your, he says it in 1,000 years ago terms, but I'm putting it into contemporary terms. It's the office that Hashem gave you to serve Him, through which you serve Him. So Hashem says, you're responsible for the upkeep of that office. Your body is not just whatever. Your body is your vehicle for serving me, and therefore, I'm giving it to you. It's a pretty amazing machine. It's a very sophisticated machine with very, very advanced technology. But the upkeep, the maintenance is on you. And therefore, you're telling Hashem, okay, it's a pretty big responsibility that you entrusted me with the body. I'm going to take good care of it. All of a sudden, your food is turning into Avodas Hashem. And Avigdor Miller, of course, would take it to the next level. And he'd say, when you're actually eating and you focus on the good taste of the food, and you say to yourself, why does this food have a good taste? Why didn't Hashem just set it up that, well, first of all, I said, why didn't Hashem, why do you have to eat on a regular basis anyways? Why couldn't Hashem set it up? We're all here for 120 years plus. Couldn't Hashem just like fuel us at once in the beginning and enough energy to get us through those 120 plus years and that's that? Why, well, why this setup that you have to keep on fueling a few times a day? Or even if it doesn't have to be a few times, you know what Ensure is? Yeah, that cup, you just drink a cup of it in the morning and that's that. It's not very good. It looks like you don't like the idea. But Hashem didn't set it up that way. Hashem, meaning sometimes there's a need. But Hashem set it up that there's, if it's just an issue of keeping you fueled, why did there have to be such a big variety with all kinds of different tastes? And the answer is that Hashem is saying, it's not just that I want your body to be healthy, but I also want you to enjoy it. And I am actually showing you my care by pampering you with this taste and that taste and that taste and that taste. So now you take it to the next level. It's not just that I'm eating in order to keep my body healthy, in order to keep me a well-functioning Oyved Hashem, but as I eat the food and I'm enjoying the taste and I am sensing Hashem's care for me. I'm sensing Hashem saying, here, I set this up for you to enjoy. I set this up for you to enjoy. Through all these things, we can take our mundane activities and dedicate them to Tasha. Going to sleep is obviously the same story. Working for a living is obviously the same story. To ask yourself, if you go out to work, or if you work at home, whatever it is, why am I working? Why say Tehillim? It's better. Learn something. I have to support a family. Why do you have to support a family? Oh, because Hashem wants me to be caring for them. Oh, it's already a whole different story. You're engaged in chesed. You're not just working for a living like everybody else does. And if you're only working to support yourself, it's the same value. Again, Hashem wants you to be functioning healthily and comfortably in order to serve Him. So you tell Hashem, all right, I'm going to put in some hours of work now so that I can serve you comfortably, healthily, and with peace of mind. Those hours of work now turned into Avodas Hashem. So this is what the Chovetz Chavos is telling us, that anything you do, mitzvahs, or even what we call rishus, and this goes back to the Chovetz Chavos who told us elsewhere. Remember that big point that he said, which is really the point we're bringing out now. Chovetz Chavos wants to do away with that whole category called rishus. Right? We know that there's things you have to be doing, things you're not allowed to be doing, and the whole realm of permitted but not obligatory. Rishus. Chaim Salvavis has a whole piece where he basically tries to just eliminate that. And he says, no, let's think of it differently. If this is something that's going to facilitate your Avodas Hashem, it's going to get you closer to Hashem, let's move it into the realm of mitzvahs. If it's not, then just eliminate it. Should it be a part of your life? So we understand that yes, we have that. We want to be thinking about, am I in that place? How much of my life, begin with mitzvahs, but then go beyond that. How much of my life, how much of my 24 hours is dedicated to Hashem? And what can I do if 17 of my hours are dedicated to Hashem? How can I now stretch that to the 18th, the 19th, the 20th, 21st, etc.? How can I encompass that much more of my life under the net of Avodas Hashem? If there are things that are absolutely not compatible with the realm of Avodas Hashem, eliminate them. Now, if you have your gambling session every day, a half hour at night, or whatever it is, and you think to yourself, well, why am I doing this? It's to make me a healthier. Absolutely no way of explaining how this fits into Avodas Hashem. Yeah, get rid of that. But so many other areas of life, including vacationing, including relaxing, etc. You think about it in those terms. Why am I doing this? Does Hashem want me to be doing this? Is this a need for my avodas Hashem? You may sometimes find yourself making tweaks, but you will not be, it will not require you to make drastic and extreme changes of lifestyle. It's just an issue of focusing it right, sometimes making some tweaks in order to really get it onto that track. And you can get to a place where 24 hours a day, you're generating Olam Haba. Okay, we introduce this next cheshbon. We'll see you next week in Mitzvah Shemblina.
Thank you very much. Good to vote.
To you, a good.
Thank you so much.